It's showtime. The really big idea that has kept me up at night for the past 2 years is finally ready for beta testing. Runner Interrupted is a comprehensive, multi-pronged support system that is right for you if your running journey is currently interrupted for any reason, from injury to pregnancy to life circumstances that are beyond your control but are still your responsibility to manage. Runner Interrupted is included in our basic suite of products that you'll be able to access with your subscription. To be clear, $30 per month grants you access to Maintain, Rebuild, and Runner Interrupted, and you can move back and forth between the programs easily. Life does not always sync neatly with the calendar, and you deserve a program that can meet you wherever you are, whenever you show up. And trust, when you're injured, you are not tapping out of work. You are showing up for different work. Our guided DIY approach gives you everything you need to succeed throughout every phase of your running journey, especially those times when your journey has been interrupted and you are doing the hardest work a runner will ever do. The fun, and make no mistake, y'all, it's my company. Can't no one tell me no, so this will be fun, begins on October the 1st. Click the link in the show notes and add your email to the list, and you will receive further instructions immediately. Or you can email info@fitnessprotection.com, and we will take it from there. Spoiler alert, if you have an account on our website already, make sure your email address and phone number are up to date in there before you email us. If you or someone you know could use a little Coach MK shining a light into their darkness, or you think a program like Runner Interrupted could be cool, be sure to tell them about us. It's taken a lot to bring this to life, and we cannot wait to share Runner Interrupted with the world, but we're going to have to. That's what a beta is for. So don't wait. Get on the list before the beta closes. We honestly have no idea how long it will be before this program is finalized and open to the general public. Hi, I'm Coach MK, founder of the Fitness Protection Program. I'm a run coach, not a life coach. We're never really talking about the running. Running is the tool. It's the conduit we use to examine the world we live in, as well as its impact on our own lives and the lives of the people around us. How we react to certain people and to certain stories tells us a lot about how we view ourselves. I'm committed to the thoughtful, intentional exploration of the importance of running so that no one discounts their own badassery, ever. Final note, this podcast is geared towards every runner who won't lose their home, livelihood, or health insurance if they show up to the corral with a hangover. Not that I'm encouraging you to do that, just saying. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fitness Protection Podcast.
Hi, Coach Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
I am really excited because one of my favorite people is here and she's going to talk to us. And this is our first bonus episode ever. And it's only right that our first bonus episode ever starts with Amy. Amy Trujillo. Am I pronouncing that terribly? Is that the worst possible pronunciation?
That was probably the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable, but it's okay. I'm going to be really honest. I just stopped pronouncing my last name correctly when I realized people they put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable. So I'm like, it's Trujillo. But when you say it, it's Trujillo. But I only when I'm really trying to put my foot down and be like, I'm actually Mexican, say it like that.
if this was the movie Inside Out and we were looking at the little balls that form the experience in my brain, I would remember that movie Drop Dead Gorgeous, where they're interviewing the wealthy family in town and they're like, Daddy hires Mexican workers. It's very good money for Mexico. And they're trying to, and this is before we even had the words for performative wokeness, right?
Oh my God.
But it's the only, it's Mexico, they say, every time they say it, you cringe and you don't, back then we didn't really know why. Now we do. Mm-hmm. It's wow, you're a terrible, you might have that Black Lives Matter sign in your yard, but man, oof, you really don't care about them, do you? You know, it's that performative mm-hmm. wokeness precisely because they get it wrong. Which is why I don't ever try to say anything. And Amy knows this. This is an inside joke. She's heard me have to work through this before. I don't say anything in someone's native tongue. I will say it. I will default to my incorrect but commonly accepted American pronunciation and then let the person correct me if it matters to them. Mm-hmm. Or ask, give them an opening to do that rather mm-hmm. than default to, because otherwise you're just Mexico. And I would rather be wrong in American than like perform wokeness incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
It makes total sense. And actually, like when someone, bruschetta, and someone corrected me at a restaurant, it's bruschetta. And I was like, dude, I'm half Italian. I don't really ever like take that. It's bruschetta to me. All right. It's fine. Like, you don't have to say it. Yeah. So I totally get what you mean.
We are in the Olive Garden, y'all. Do you think they care?
That's a word that I used in class very often to teach students, because they enrolled in a class where they professed to want to know how to speak Italian correctly. That's the word.
For the record, like Sarah taught Italian at Harvard.
Oh, what, so I'm not allowed to be in this conversation because I taught at Harvard. Well, even the kids at Harvard, you know, they know that it's bruschetta. And so when you write the word on the board and they say, yeah, it's bruschetta, and you're like, actually, and then you blow their minds a little bit, because CH in Italian is always pronounced with a hard C sound, which is exactly the opposite of the way it works in English. And so you put it up there and you show it to them, and then they remember it after that. That's like the first thing they learn, where they're like, because they're like, ah, now I get to be the smart one who knows the real way to pronounce it. And then if they go out into the world and harm the world with that knowledge, I apologize. It's probably my fault. But it was effective for my purposes in the moment.
In the moment, yes.
And those moments add up to something that really matters. The reason I think Drop Dead Gorgeous, which was made in 1999 and critically panned at the time, Wesley Morris of Still Processing, one of my favorite people ever, like Still Processing. By the way, if you guys didn't know, they came back out today. I was listening to part of it this morning. It was just like happy tingles. I love everything they have to say. I could listen to them all day long. If they had a Patreon, I would be like, if it was $100 a month just to watch them that like record the sessions, not even able to interact with them. I just want to like, give me more in some way that wouldn't just like show your work in some way and let me and charge me access. I want to be there. But all that to say, like, he wrote a really beautiful takedown of Drop Dead Gorgeous at the time. But it wasn't funny. Cause again, we didn't have the language back then. What we would say was, ooh, that's wrong. And because it was funny and because that, what made it funny was the fact that it was true, but it had crossed a line. It was that thing you don't say, or that thing you know not to do. Like, why in the world would you smile into a TV camera and say Mexico? Like, you're not, what are you demonstrating there? Like, these are conversations we weren't really having back then. What has changed over time, and the reason so many TV shows and movies have not aged well, is that that line you crossed was effectively making fun of another person's oppression. And we have rolled that back a lot. I can still go back and watch Drop Dead Gorgeous and find it funny, but I probably wouldn't watch it with my kids. I can't watch 51st Dates, for example. That one, just like 5 minutes in, I was cringing so hard. I'm like, oof, no. But the things that Drop Dead Gorgeous, the reason I can still watch it is that the women are white and rural and look a whole lot me. And that looks a whole lot like my high school. So there's a part of it that's intensely relatable for me, again, as a woman. Like, there's very little that reflects my experience in a way that I can laugh at, because it feels lived in, as opposed to what you think my life must have been like based off of whatever the New York City told you my life must have been like. So that when I talk about representation mattering, I get how hollow that can sound coming from me now. But me now had to work really hard and has come a long way from where I started. And the fact that it's hard to believe where I started tells you that no one really believes the American dream. So one of the things that we have not completely gotten to unrolling yet when it comes to making jokes about race, go back and watch a really great one. Dave Chappelle, watched his first stand-up. I couldn't laugh at it. I was just like, where he's laughing about, like, you know, my white friend, when we get high, I let him drive because I know the police stop him and he can ask for directions. Please stop me. And you're just like, oh, because we're having a conversation about police brutality now that we were not having even in, I think, what, 2002 when that was recorded. Mm-hmm. So from 1999 to 2002 to today, one of the areas that we have yet to touch is fat phobia and the messages about fat phobia and drugs. And I feel like my responses to the depiction of Adderall in this movie are a little bit separate than the conversation I want to have today. I say all the time, the way you talk about drugs to children matter. And I can tell a person who's never tried them, and that fear, the reason I tried drugs recreationally for the first time wasn't that I overcame the fear. It was that they were presented to me as this is a safe space to do something that is generally dangerous. And it was hard to say no to that. And there was no good reason to say no to that because I had never been prepared to be in a room full of people that had the jobs that I wanted and the lives that I wanted and worked with me and saying how to say no, how to opt out in a way that wouldn't make them feel bad. I wasn't equipped to do that. Because when you say, even today, when I had a group of friends and they're getting a bottle of wine and I'm like, no, thank you. It's a thing. I have to explain it. So these are all pressures that I still carry as a grown up because they're conversations I did not have as a child. And I really want to make some of these themes, at least make people aware of them as we move forward. Because just like I know I couldn't find her asking for Adderall funny, tell your doctor you really that like I'm scared that my weight is a problem. I'm having trouble losing it. Like she could have come up with a lie to ask for appetite suppressants, to ask for stimulants. Like not to say that she would get them, because this isn't trying to teach that, but the fact that she asked should have been a flag in some way. The doctor, it's not that I think he handled it poorly. It's that he didn't make that connection when she came back with the stress fracture to connect it to nutrition. That's the second visit. That should have been, to me, that should have been a pattern. I'm not a doctor. And that was what really kicked off all my questions that I was asking in the podcast on my doctor friends. So we don't, and what I can't get away from is that the definition, the medical definition of anorexia only applies if a person is 17% body fat or less. They are below the BMI range. So that technically, medically, can a fat person have an eating disorder? Is that, do we not care about disordered eating patterns? Do we recognize what they look like? What's the difference between disordered eating and dieting? I don't know the answers to this. I want to explore it a little bit more. But while we're not talking about it, if we're still bringing it into a feel-good rom-com movie, we could be slapping people in the faces with messages that we aren't aware of because it's, again, a conversation that we're not having. You don't get a whole lot of fat people on screen. So if somebody like the man I'm married to said, hey, look, this is a movie about a fat man. And there's one that's actually made, Run, Fat Boy, Run. It's from England. I don't know if you guys remember it. You might have seen it, might have not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was Simon Pegg, who was brilliant. I don't like zombie anything. I loved Shaun of the Dead. I thought that was really brilliant.
Movies are brilliant. But
they're also painful to watch because, again, he's showing you something ugly that you could laugh at, but you don't know why you're laughing. You're uncomfortably laughing. And I dig that. So I'm thinking about that experience, like what message am I supposed to be getting from a movie like that? I'm like, ooh, now you've come for me. It feels like you think you're speaking to me, but just like when you talk about what rural Tennessee must be like using phrases like flyover country, which indicates you've never been and have no intention of going. I would call it, if you really wanted to come up with something that sounded less offensive, because I do take offense to that, call it drive into country, because you gotta, the drive to get to where my parents live is longer than the flight to get there. So call it drive into country. Don't call it fly over. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's semantics. When I think about when experiences are supposed to mirror mine, Schitt's Creek does in a really great way. But a lot that I've seen up to that point don't. We're the butt of the joke. And mm-hmm. that's not okay. Mm-hmm. And I feel like people that we tried to unpack a lot of the things that we thought were jokes in the podcast or were going to. But it all kind of started for me when I had my moment where I was living my pain on the track. And Amy was part of my first group training cycle. I didn't realize, by the way, that you and Dove weren't friends really before that. I thought you two had known each other your whole lives. That is still shocking and beautiful to me and really cool. She mentioned that the other day. She's like, I didn't know her, but you met her when I did MK. Yeah. She's some casual question. Like, you met her when I did MK. I'm like, wait, what? Oh, now I'm kind of jealous. You two are really tight. That's awesome. I used to see Amy all the time. I want Amy to come hang out with my kids, make us chocolate chip pancakes on a Tuesday just because.
I didn't make her my bottom.
Oh my God. Either way, it's still perfect.
That's even better.
When you hear the bigger podcast, you'll understand what Amy taught me, and it's a lesson I never forgot. So when I saw something that made me uncomfortable and realized that I wasn't the person to deliver this message again, because I am white, I'm as American as they come, I'm thin, I can talk about your non-neuronormativity and why perpetuating the Adderall myth allows NPR to refer to recreational Adderall, which shouldn't happen. It's a Schedule II prescription drug. There is no recreational Adderall, only prescription drug abuse, and that is dangerous. When we're taking something quite serious and making it and missing it, or people are defending it as not that offensive, then you have to wonder who else is missing the message and what message is actually landing. So I went straight to Amy. Amy, the first person to ever call me out for saying, hey, you know that thing you did to make me feel good, made me feel like shit, please don't do it again, in a very kind way with tears in her eyes. And everything I do, I pretend Amy's right there. Can I say this? Should I say this? So if ever you've wondered, does MK ever hold back? Fuck yes, I do. And it starts with Amy. I immediately sent this to her and was like, I'm sorry to ask, but I just need to know if you see what I see. Have you seen this movie? Would you watch? And then she said, no, let me see. And I think you volunteered to jump in and see the trailer. And then that beautiful 20-minute diatribe that'll be in the show notes.
I loved that. And by the way, I don't think we've said the title of the movie yet. The title of the movie we've been talking about all along is Brittany Runs a Marathon. And it's probably going to be somewhere in the intro and in the title and in the podcast notes. But I just wanted to make sure. Because I feel like we went through Drop Dead Gorgeous to get there, and we have arrived at Brittany Runs a Marathon and Amy's amazing take, which I loved, and I co-signed entirely on everything that you said, which was why I didn't want to see the movie either. MK, we'll talk in the bigger podcast about my experience going to see it despite my and MK's reservations.
But the reason I wanted you two to sort of talk about it a little bit today, and then I'm going to sit back, is that one difference, when I say diet culture hits everyone equally, that is true. I believe that, because we got to start there. Thin shaming is not a compliment. It's shame is shame, period. The difference is your ability to navigate society once you're in it. So what you think about yourself when you're at home is one thing, and then it is compounded when you walk into society. So the thin girl that's like, you know, does this make me look fat? What she's asking is there a penalty I'm going to have to pay somewhere that I'm not aware of? Because sometimes we step into something, we think we look fantastic, and then others are like, what made you think that was a good idea? Which is terrible. You should never do. But all that just to say that pride, what you feel, that discomfort is infinitely higher when you have reached a size where society would say that nothing looks good on you. And that's terrible. So it's hard to know where that line is, which is why people worry about it so much. Am I there yet? Am I there yet? What is fat? Where does fatness begin? So for you to have similar issues to Amy, even though on the outside, it would be easy to dismiss your Sarah, like you are privileged, you are white, you come from, I know your mom died really young and that's terrible, but I mean, like, you, no one knows that when they look at you. You look, people look at Amy and they're going to see something very, very different. They're not going to guess damage. You know what I mean? So that's why I thought, and it's also important to get that representation on here from someone who had probably disordered eating for a while. There was a very real forces that created that. That's not you being crazy or you being weak. Those same forces act on Amy, but they act on her in a very different way. So I thought you two having this conversation would be sort of validating to your feelings, because I want to validate everyone. Like, I shouldn't feel this way. Your feelings are valid, period. Whether you're a size 6 and BMI says you should be a size 2, or if you're a size 26 and you can't buy clothes even at Walmart. So that there's a societal aspect of access to fat phobia. And this movie clearly didn't think that anyone who was truly fat was going to see it, but it starts with Amy talking about Hollywood fat. What's Hollywood fat?
Hollywood fat is really cute. I was actually thinking about this today. I have to make myself leave every single morning the mirror and be like, Amy, get out, like, go, you look fine. Like, if you, when you look at me, didn't know that I had fat on my body, like, I honestly think that's on you, because like, it's clear I have fat on my body. So why am I so ashamed of the clothes that like, that show this fat? And I'm like in a pencil skirt right now, and I have, you know, like, I hold my weight in my tummy. So like, I have like the roll of my tummy and you can see it in the pencil skirt. I'm like, Amy, leave, just walk out the door. They already know you're fat. It's okay. And so Hollywood cute is always pretty. It's always cute. It's always like they hold their weight in their thighs. They hold their weight in their arms. They don't hold their weight in their stomach like I do. And like, maybe they have wider set hips and it's always like, when I see Hollywood fat, I'm like, that's still not me. That's still not me. That's me when I'm laying down and I'm like almost to that point where I have a flat tummy, but that's still not me. And so like, it's one of these, like, Hollywood is trying to appeal to me, but it's still not me. It's, you know, like my mom is Hollywood fat. She's got a flat stomach. She's got a wider butt. She's got definitely wider hips. But she's still very, I still think my mom is thin, but I compare my mom to myself. And I'm like, I don't have a flat stomach. And I actually like, and I was looking at this Brittany character and I was like, she's not fat in my eyes. Like mm-hmm. she might see that fat in her eyes. And this is not to discount anyone who, like, when they look at their bodies, they see fat. I mean, I see it in my middle schoolers who are teeny tiny and they grab whatever they can and be like, that's my fat, Mr. Hio. And I'm like, oh, baby girl, this is fat. But, and it's, then it's like, why is this a competition? Why is this a competition that your fat is not my fat? And like, my fat is worse because X, Y, and Z. But it's these beauty standards of like, this is acceptable fat, but it's not even acceptable fat because the entire premise of this movie is her losing this weight. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm going to be honest, I didn't see it. All I saw was the preview of it. And in the last couple of years,
you learned everything there was to learn about it from the preview.
From the preview,
I've been saying that, yeah,
because they all follow like the same premise of like, oh, she needs to change herself, and the way that she's going to change herself is like losing her weight and all of it. And in the last couple of years, I've started like really reevaluating the movies that I watch and really like thinking about, why am I watching this? What am I getting from this? What is Hollywood trying to give me in this? And is it making me feel better about myself, being a kinder person? And if it's not giving me that, like, it's not worth my time. You know, like I was definitely that person who went to 2-3 movies a week. I always saw the latest film and what are you doing this weekend? Oh, I'm going to go see this movie and this movie and this movie. And now I'm like, I don't really need to see that. You know, like that's Hollywood. I go back and forth. I'm like, is Hollywood so great because they know how I feel and write stories about how I feel? Or do I start projecting my feelings onto Hollywood movies and that's what makes them so great? And so like, no, in reality, like I am okay with myself and I am okay at a size 16, 18, 20, depending on who makes the brand and like what the thing is. And is it like, because I've grown up with this is pretty, this is skinny, this is like in these definitions. And so like Hollywood has told me what I'm supposed to think about myself, or is Hollywood really good at like relating to who I am? Because like how many times we watch a movie and we're like, oh, that's me, whether the character was skinny or fat or Mexican or white or whatever. Like, who made those definitions? Did I make those definitions or did Hollywood? And who's the better seller? I'm not sure. But
yeah, I feel like there's a real tendency on, well, there has always been a real tendency on my part to want to see movies as this, I don't know, this is going to sound ridiculous because it is this like kind of impartial arbiter that just show things as they are. It's like, well, the movies, they are just a barometer of what is. And therefore, when I put myself up against the movies, what I am judging myself against is an objective standard. And when you actually say it like that, you realize how crazy that is because people make movies. And we have learned a lot and reflected a lot in the past 3 years, on who the people who make movies are and who has the power and where the money comes from. And we know that there is nothing whatsoever impartial disinterested, about who makes movies. But that when I was growing up and my weight fluctuated a lot when I was in high school and early college is when I was at my heaviest. And for many years after that, after I lost a lot of weight, I still never felt like I was thin enough. And, I always compared my body to women in movies. I always did, especially if the women in movies, if the women in the movies are somehow being judged by the movie for whether they are fat or thin or acceptable or unacceptable.
And I, so I, you know, this movie, if I had seen this movie 10 years ago, I would absolutely have been staring at her body piece by piece and being like, well, how fat is her stomach compared to my stomach? How fat are her arms compared to my arms? How fat are her? Like, what would I look like if I wore that? Would I, like, according to the standards of this movie, am I okay or am I not okay? That, and it wasn't just movies. It was people I saw on the street. It was people I went to school with. It was people I saw everywhere. And it was, and if I could reassure—
Am I the fat girl and I never knew it before?
Well, or like, am I the fattest girl in this room right now? Let me see. Let me see. And there was something about movies that felt like, oh, well, you know, if the movie says that this is acceptable, then that must be because it's true. The movie would only say that if it were really true. And I recently recorded an episode of the Morning Mantra podcast about the way comments from strangers, people you've never seen before, who just decide to hurl some shitty insult at you can feel almost worse than coming from someone who knows you, because you're like, this person has no vested interest in the outcome of my day. Why would they say something to me unless they were telling the real truth? Like, I used, you know, they're the truth tellers. They're not the fucking truth tellers.
That's called fawning.
Yeah. Right. And I own that. I've done that a lot. So I think that it is very easy to look at a movie like this and say, oh, the movie thinks this woman is fat. What does that make me? That's a reaction that I had to so many movies growing up. And this time I sort of felt the reaction coming when I saw the preview and I was like, I'm really tired of this. I'm really tired of going through this with myself whenever a movie that wants to have an opinion about this comes out. And no, I seriously doubt they showed this movie to any fat people and asked them, what do you think about this? How are we treating this story? Do you feel like this is fair? Do you feel like this is, you know, honestly compassionate towards someone who might identify with Brittany?
Yeah. And I, you know, it, like when you say that, like, it just makes me think of like all the, literally the work that I have to do each morning I wake up, you know, like, and it's like looking at the mirror and like looking at this and looking at, and criticizing my body and doing all of these things. And I'm like, Amy, stop. Like, you got to this place, one, because of trauma, because I heard it from my family members, you know, like, my nickname in Spanish is Panzona. Like that's fat girl in Spanish. Like that's what my family, I grew up being called Panzona. My little brother, we call him Panzon. Like that's just like how we grew up. And like, I internalized that and, you know, and like things that were said. And so like, there's that side of trauma that like I dealt with and dealing with constantly every single day. But then to see like just the barrage of images and it's like, Amy, let it go. Like, this is not who you are. This is like, it's just not who I am. And I have to like fight this battle every day, every moment, every mirror I pass, everything. And then to see it continually happen in movies, in Hollywood, in magazines, on the streets around me. But you know, like, this is the work that I have to like stop and one of the things that I've loved about working with MK over the last 5 years is like, I now have MK's voice in my head that's telling myself to shut up. Like, Amy, that's their thoughts.
Walk out the door.
That's the, like, how do you feel about yourself? And I'm like, well, I feel fucking good. Like, and do I have a flat stomach? No, but what do I need a fucking flat stomach for? What do I need these for other than to appease society? Am I still a kind human? Do I still love every single one of my students? I love every one of my students all in different ways. You know, like, does my fat stomach keep me from loving them any less? Does it keep me from loving my parents or my nieces and my nephews and my surrogate nieces and nephews and friends and all of these things? And like every single day I have to tell myself, stop looking in the mirror, stop looking at that scale. And it doesn't help that movies like Brittany Runs a Marathon keep coming out. And it's all about like, she needed to find herself. She needed to do all of these things. And I'm like,
But could she found herself without weight loss? What was she finding with the weight loss other than that people finally see her in a different way, or that you are not, you have fingernails. You are not your fingernails.
We live in a society that treats you better in a thinner body. Like,
yeah.
Why
do we treat?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and even then, like, yes, there are microaggressions that I go through every single day in every single point. Like I finally like talked to the Camp Gladiator trainer today that I was like, hey, just FYI, like I'm just not like into this. Like I have to fight my own demons every single day that I'm working out with you. And this is not a bad thing. And you probably don't know that like, that this is an issue for me. So I'm like, need to bring this up. But like people do notice me. I just didn't notice that people noticed me. Right. Mm-hmm. Like when I went and got my coffee yesterday, I had someone hold the door open for me when I went in and hold the door when I came out. Do I have a flat stomach? No. Do I, like, I am a fat woman, but you know, I just didn't want to notice the kind things that people do for me and the way that people look at me and the way that people like interact with me. I didn't want to notice that because it doesn't speak to the narrative that I'm speaking to myself. Mm-hmm. And so when Brittany's like, people finally notice me. I'm like, bullshit. You just realized that people have been noticing you. You just didn't like yourself, you know? And I thought about it, like when I got coffee yesterday, that I was like, how many times do I just walk with my head down? Right. Mm-hmm. Because, and that comes from a real place, because it comes from like avoiding the eye stares of someone, because I don't want them to like be looking at me and like, oh, she got a donut with her coffee. Of course she did. She's fat. Like, fuck you, man. I wanted a goddamn donut and I'm going to eat it. Like, you know, like, but prior to me really, and this has been a work in progress. This has been a long time coming. But like I had my head down, so I didn't see the nice things that people were doing to me. I didn't want to recognize that people were looking at me. And also like the same way that I want you to respect my story, I'm not respecting other people's stories. I'm assuming that they're fat shaming me whenever they look at me. Like maybe they are. But like how come I can't presume positive intent with them the way that I expect them to presume positive intent with me?
Not to defend the person at the who about the donut, but as someone with celiac, I will see people staring at my favorite place, Devil's Food. They'll be staring at all of the pastries, and there is nothing in there that is gluten free. Nothing. The coffee's amazing. I can't eat anything else, and I'll be like, "What are you going to get?" And I'll try to engage them in conversations because I'm jealous. I miss being able to walk into a store and be like, "What do I want?" as opposed to "What can I have?" It's a very different question. It's not as much fun because that one thing that they do make. You know, it's just like, So anyway, but then it didn't hit me until I saw the look on her face as I placed my order, when she realized I wasn't ordering one, like how that might've hit her. And I was just, because I asked the barista all of like, they can order whatever they want. Please at some point just make one pastry for me. Just one. Thanks. Bye. And I'm like, she has no idea that I have celiac, but her fat was visible. And I didn't ask her because she was fat. It was just because she was next to me and stare and like obviously choosing, which I don't get the luxury of choice. But you would know none of that. I'm just some skinny white woman.
Right. And you know, like, and I think I've been thinking about this a lot over the last 24 hours of like, we stopped having conversations with people and like getting to know each other and like not choosing to be kind in all of our interactions and all of this. And so like, it does turn into these microaggressions. It does turn into these things of like, you have no idea whether this person is like a celiac who just like wants to live in that or is silently like judging. And it's because we don't talk to each other. We don't get to know each other. Like our single stories don't matter. Mm-hmm. And we can blame, this is Hollywood, this is pop culture, this is this, but like in reality, like I get more mad at my kids when they're mean to each other. My kids are my students. I get more mad at my students when they're mean to each other than anything. Cause I'm like, just be kind. This world is hard enough. Just be kind.
Yeah. And I really, what you said before, made something go off in my head. The thing that bothered me about the movie is that the movie bought into this narrative of now she's thin and therefore she gets more respect. Now she's thin and therefore she's pretty enough to date. Like,
and she's healed. It was never about the weight. You fixed the other thing that we needed you to fix. Yeah. We didn't know,
really? I think we can and should demand a better world where, of course, people hold the door open for you, whether you're fat or not. Like, of course. And we should demand, like, everyone should demand to live in that world. We should not accept, if it is true, as the movie says it is, that, like, someone will hold the subway door open for you if you lose some weight. Then that's bullshit. And we shouldn't like glorify that and make it into a movie. We should be like, that's, you know, the movie should, I think if the movie really wants to be like feel good and empowering, it'd be much more feel good and empowering to say, that's kind of fucked up. You know, you should like, everyone deserves to have the subway door held open for them. And by the way, not all men are more attracted to women after they lose weight. That's not really a thing, but it is a thing.
Learn that one the hard way.
Seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are ways in which like telling things like they are and being really frank with how, you know, with how broken the world is can be a helpful thing in some ways. That's one thing. But wanting to be a feel-good movie that also demands better for everyone, especially for someone like a Britney character who has some issues. Some of them are physiological health related. Many of them are psychological. They have to do with, you know, her having had a difficult past with her family, which is alluded to a lot in the movie. And she also like deserves a world in which she doesn't need to lose weight in order to be loved and accepted and seen as, you know, sort of worthy of a good life.
And all the people with eating disorders who have to navigate this world as well, staying in various stages of recovery, deserve to live in a world where the things we encourage implicitly or explicitly fat people to do, the things we don't talk about, like, oh, she's dieting so hard, as opposed to this is borderline, this is disordered eating. I'm not a professional here, but I'm worried about this. And that person has to sit there and keep their mouth shut that we're this behavior. No one is calling it out in a fat person, but they have gone to therapy and maybe in-house treatment. And it's a struggle every day not to do those things. Why don't I get to do them? It's okay for her, but not me. It's a problem, period.
Yeah.
Period. No matter what size you are like this. So that's for me was the problem too. They turned it into the biggest loser on screen. Name one movie where a woman goes through a personal journey to something better to realize that everything she did was on the inside that did not involve weight loss. I can't.
I'm going to have to think about that one.
Either doesn't involve weight loss or gets the guy in the end that was always there waiting for her. Again, the male gaze determines how the story is told. It's what somebody thinks the story is like who hasn't experienced it. But we take it as true and wonder why that isn't our truth. I did this. I did the work. I lost the weight. I didn't get the guy. I did this. I did everything right. But somehow this formula, I don't feel better and I don't have the dude. Where's my growth? Where's my journey? I still feel unresolved. You didn't do anything wrong. That's the danger of these stories is that it's why I yelled at my kids. If I was Secret Life of Pets too. Toy Story 4, I'm yelling at the screen. I'm having conversations with my children afterwards. And my husband's like, do you need to not come to these things? Should I take them alone? I'm like, that don't make it better than the man in their life sanctioning it. Absolutely not. He's like, okay, I just don't like seeing you mad. And I get it. And he's not a bad dude. He means really well. All of you, all three of you have met, both of you have met Alex. He's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But like that implicit sign off, I can't allow either. If I think a movie's going to be problematic, I want to be there because I want to have that conversation. I don't want it to be recurring.
You have to have that conversation. And you know, like something that like, you know, like, all right, great. The weight thing. We got the struggle of the weight. We're working on the weight struggle of the weight. Now we're working on the damn struggle of being single. Oh, Amy, how come you don't have children? How come you're not married? I'm like, I don't know. Cause no one wants to procreate with me right now. Like, because like, I don't, but why is that a bad thing?
and like now having that conversation, because I've had the fuck that conversation for the longest time, but now I'm like, all right, guys, we're good. We know that I'm comfortable being fat. Okay. So now, and I'm not comfortable being single because I haven't worked through it. And ultimately, like, that's what I want in my life. But again, that goes back to that same story that we're seeing over and over and over. I don't have my worth until I'm married and have a child. And whew, thank God we're having this discussion right now, because like we're going to save 10 years of work that mm-hmm. that I did to come in and out and realize, oh, it wasn't about the damn weight. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's not, the happiness isn't going to come also from me finding a husband and having my children, but like it's,
the weight is the easy and the obvious thing to talk about. So we do. That doesn't make it the source of the problem.
Yeah. It's never about the weight. It's never about the running.
Nope. So Amy, thank you.
So this was wonderful. This was perfect. Thank you for letting
me. Thank you so much.
Join in. But yeah, I'm gonna disconnect and go get some kids so they can play Magic the Gathering.
All right, bye, see Amy. You guys. Thank you, Amy. We love you.
Love you. Bye.
Love you. She is so awesome. I love her. Oh my gosh. That was so much fun. I want to hang out with her someday.
I tell you, Amy, when you hear Amy's coming, it's not because she tries to be the life of the party. She just, you gravitate towards her. She's just this incredible ball of light and sweetness. Yeah. And there's not a mean bone in her body. Like she doesn't, the way I kind of filter through the world is, other than like what I've said, people who've done the ugly work and those who haven't, it's those who, whether or not they've done the work, like how do I have to worry about how I conduct myself? And Amy is one of those people. She's just good and easygoing and doesn't judge anything. And if you tread on her toes, she'll call you out, but not shame you to the point that you feel like you can't talk to her anymore. Just like, hey, okay, that wasn't all right. Try mm-hmm. this instead. That worked. Thank you. You actually got your point across without hurting my feelings. Thank you. And I had never really seen that in action before. And if it hurt her, she didn't show it. She just deflected and kept moving. And so I never forgot that, because it's always, I'd never been shown how, right? You say you go along and there's no way to sort of interrupt the flow without being the butthead, without being the party pooper. And somehow she's never the party pooper. She's the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. And I wanted her to speak, and I know it felt really personal to her and her experience, but that really matters. Each fat person is still a person. She is more than her fat. She has fingernails. We're not talking about her fingernails. She's not identified by her fingernails. She is not FloJo, but that's the only woman I can think of who might be identified by her fingernails. And that was branding on her part and intentional. It wasn't accidental. Like she never had to be like, I'm more than my fingernails, y'all. I'm FloJo. But the fact that Amy and so many people like her have to be like, hey, I am more than this. And you have no idea what that is, because all you've ever seen is the fat sidekick, the fat relative, the person ahead of you in the coffee shop who you've never actually talked to, et cetera, et cetera. They're all, your life reflects the same tropes that you've seen on screen, because we don't get out much. We avoid people like you, and here's why. And I just felt like it was important to have her talk a little bit about her personal experiences being, you know, that fat person that gets that fat message mm-hmm. and is somehow how reductive that can be. And how problematic it is. I know when I saw What to Expect When You're Expecting and Cameron Diaz is pregnant, she's obviously wearing a belly. And I'm like, let me tell you, when I got pregnant, it was just not just in my belly. It looked like someone blew me up, like one of those Macy's Thanksgiving Day balloons. It was in my face and my arms and my back. It was a weight gain everywhere. It didn't reflect my experience. So it made me angry. And I didn't quite know why. But hearing Amy respond to the fat suit made me realize exactly what made me angry about it. You think you have an idea what this experience is like just by putting on a costume that doesn't even reflect what weight gain would look like on this body. Mm-hmm. So, and I just was like, wow, mm-hmm. interesting. Which is not to say Cameron Diaz can't play that part. Look, I have a lot of friends who work in Hollywood, and they, their stance, I spoke to a couple of screenwriters about it, and all of their response was kind of the same. It doesn't need to reflect reality. It needs to reflect a familiar narrative. That's really like
when we talk about accuracy, I was like, accuracy, Air Force One, the Russian in that movie is so bad. Like, you could have hired at least one Russian actor in Air Force One instead of using really bad Russian accents. And they're like, how many Russians are going to watch the movie? We're trying to sell things. Like, we don't, accuracy doesn't help sell things. And I'm like, that is something I really hope changes as we progress and we become more aware. The same things that make Drop Dead Gorgeous almost untouchable now, that definitely make 50 First Dates untouchable now, I hope are the tropes that are disappearing. And I can't wait for some of these ideas about fat people to start disappearing too. Shrill is a fantastic step in that direction. I love that show. Mm-hmm, I know you love too. That show. I want to see messiness connected to all kinds of people. I understand that was what Dumplin was trying to do. I don't like the way they treated the thin characters, but Dumplin on Netflix is another one that is told from an overweight child's, and I'm sorry, that is a child, teenager, and not from an overweight woman's point of view, based on a book that she wrote about her own life. And yeah, we need more of that to have better representation. Mm-hmm. To have a better understanding of the people around us, because you wouldn't know my story, because you can't identify me necessarily as a celiac, but you also don't know Amy's, and you don't know how awesome she is and how okay she is with her body. But she's also what she would call, and we didn't have time obviously to talk about with the desire to play magic, she's what she would call functionally thin. She doesn't have to have the same conversations that sometimes my family and I do about which restaurants we can go to because it'll have seats that are large enough, which hipster bars we have to avoid because there'll be no place to sit, and standing for too long is just not a whole lot of fun. Or when we do finally get to sit, it's going to be on something this wide, like places that are specifically built for smaller people. And, you know, she doesn't need to buy two plane tickets to take this trip to Greece that she's going to be taking, where she's going to run part of the Athens marathon with our friend Dove.
Oh, cool. Wow.
Yeah. So she can travel with, and does travel with impunity. And I love that she can still function on a level, and she said this to me privately before too. Imagine if I was had the same proportions and was tall, I would be too wide to do things. Thank God I'm short. And I think that was one of those things that was meant to be a joke. It's funny because it's true. And we laugh at it, because if we stopped to not laugh, we would cry. I was like, I was doing the math and imagining, whoa, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be, that's a whole different level of access. And it's not necessarily funny. But anyway, so I tell you all that to introduce one final thought that I didn't expect to have today, but I was excited about. I've totally forgotten. Back in January, when my school did this fundraiser, a mom was auctioning off boudoir photos, and I had no idea. This is all she does. She's like exclusively a boudoir photographer. And I am a gigantic prude. That is, for good or bad, that is not ever changing. I don't want to know if you read 50 Shades of Grey. I don't care that you watched the movie this weekend. I don't want to know what your reaction is. I just don't want to know. Like, that is, it's not like I judge it. I just don't want that visual in my head of anybody. But when I'm standing there looking at boudoir photos, being like, oh, she is that, does this, whoa, didn't want to know that. I'm like internally melting down, and a teacher comes up behind me and it's like, are you thinking of buying it? I'm like, nope. She's like, yeah, me neither. I wish I could though. I was like, wait, why can't you? And this teacher is large. She is beyond that point that I just referenced. There are things she can't do due to her size. And I was like, why not go get sexy photos? Like, let me tell you, there's a difference between being like the next in line to get your picture made and the embarrassment you feel, and being like paying a photographer to make you look and feel sexy. You are in control of that. You need to go do this. I'm going to do it. So I bid and I won, and she went, and she just got them back because it took months to get her to agree to do it, which I didn't push. I was like, this is here. It's yours when you're ready. You can. She's like, I really want to, but that watching her struggle with this thing, I feel like she does. Like, I don't have the right to feel this way about my body. No one's allowed me to feel like watching her wrestle that. And because we talked about it every day, I saw her every day at drop off, and she'd be like, I haven't done them yet. I'm like, I don't care. Do them when you're ready to do them. It's, if you do this for me, then we're missing the point. Mm-hmm. I just want you to have this. And if you want to give it away, give it away, but give it away because you truly don't want to do it. Do or do not. There is no should. Mm-hmm. Well, she did them. And she got them back, and she had them at school with her and was showing them off to people. So not only she's bragging about it. She showed all the teachers. She showed some of the parents. Aren't they good?
Wow. Oh my gosh.
So I'm going to take her two favorite and put them up there.
I love that.
Because The reason I bought this for her was remembering it's taking little steps to reclaim something that should have always been yours. It was an important step in my therapeutic process. I remember I didn't wear clothes that fit for probably 11 years after my rape. And step one towards reclaiming my body and not and functioning based off what I want to do rather than what I think I can or should do, that it was to start wearing clothes that fit. And once I started wearing clothes that fit, that was kind of mind blowing. I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. Now I'm going to wear pretty clothes. And I started the transformation was a lot more rapid than that. People remember me coming back second year of business school and being like, what happened? I'm like, everything. It was everything. That is a personal journey. That is freedom. That was hard fought. Just being able to, like the person who can walk into the delicatessen the bakery. And it's about what do I want to have versus what's the one or two things that I can have? It's a very different question. Being able to treat my body and my closet and my day-to-day, those little things that so many people take for granted, trauma is what stands in between. Not having trauma is a privilege. You shouldn't feel guilty for it, but rather acknowledge that those of us who do, you don't see the work, you don't see the burden. It's absolutely there. There's this whole canon of things that we feel like we can't do, that we shouldn't do. And the things that we feel like we should be doing, kind of guilty for not doing, right? So Amy is an amazing person to be around because she is so shameless about like, I run because I want to, not because I need to be seen working on this anymore. And there was a period where I did. And I really hope that this is a step for this teacher as well. She's so amazing. I mean, she's another one. She's a joy to be around and she's so beautiful. And I'm like, it just hurts me that you don't look in the mirror and see something pretty. So I hope this is a step towards reclaiming the freedom that I found rather quickly. Granted, it was easier for me to find in this body that enjoys a lot of privilege. But I hope that if I could do one thing on this earth, it would to be give everyone the freedom that I had to, or the tools to go find the freedom that I had to fight for tooth and nail. And I hope you get it in less than 10 years.
I hope so too. I love that. Thank you for sharing those. And thank you to the teacher who shared those photos, because one of the things that has been the best for me in moving away from what I was talking about with Amy, in terms of like looking at bodies that a Hollywood movie has designated in some category and then comparing myself to them and trying to figure out like, am I okay or am I not okay based on this comparison that has been set up. I love following fat people on Instagram and seeing beautiful bodies being portrayed beautifully and doing everyday things, running, especially, hanging out on the beach. My favorite episode of Shrill is the one with the pool party where she goes to the pool party. I'm not spoiling too much of the show. I promise you should really go watch Shrill on Hulu, but there's this beautiful, beautiful scene where Aidy Bryant, the actress who plays Annie, goes to a pool party and just watches all of these fat women in bathing suits enjoying themselves and being happy and feeling good about themselves and just like living and being. And that, like, I wept watching that scene because I love that people are demanding that art be made about people whose bodies have not been celebrated on screen before. It is so, so meaningful to me. And I know to a lot of other people too.
And to not just see Hollywood fat. I mean, yeah. they're real fat.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Very much so. And of all different kinds. I mean, Amy was talking about the way like her fat is different on her body from other bodies. I mean, like it could not have been a wider array of bodies and bathing suits and faces and hairstyles and just, God, it was really great. I still think about it. I watched that show like 6 months ago. I'm still thinking about that.
Yeah. There's something to the way we talk about it and connect it almost, you know, like what is gluttony and what is sloth really? And with the fat body, we tend to see both. Those are two sins, right? Too big. I'm not Catholic. I don't know. Amy was a nun for a while. I still
got that. Yeah, that we need to have another bonus episode so I can hear about that.
Yeah. Right. That was an experience. I'm like, I wish he was here to still correct me. Like, that's a carnal sin, a venial sin. I don't remember. I had Georgetown, and then the two semesters I had to take was not enough to learn anything about Catholicism.
Read Dante.
God, no. No, that's too highfalutin for me, man. I'm not learning Italian to go read something so we could connect on that level, Sarah. I'm good.
There are so many translations. I still love you.
I love you too. Oh my God, what was that saying? I don't even remember.
Sins.
Oh yeah. So it's easy to look at someone and be like, this person, you know, is talking about them like an overgrown yard. Oh, just a little bit of work. And that's why it's so hard to have the last 10 or 15 pounds, that it's that fear baked into all of us, that the moral connection between our size, I'm bigger than someone thinks I should be. Where's that narrow band that I'm allowed to be in? Am I outside the band for this person? It might be a band, like that band of how, what you wear and how you look and how you present yourself, what's acceptable and what isn't. And I'm glad that that band is getting wider for people, but that's, you know, I'm not trying to say that the person who's 15 pounds overweight has the same experience as someone that's 100, who is 150 pounds overweight. But the difference is can be this. If you think about the weight, the work, if we're going to put it in terms of work, the work required to lose 150 pounds can seem so staggeringly high that you're almost not going to have that conversation with the person. You're going to avoid eye contact. And that's probably a good thing. Avoid eye contact so you don't say anything to hurt their feelings. That's fine. You do that. If the person who's only 50, only quote, finger quote, it should be so easy. Here's this and this, diet tips and tricks, and you'll be fine. It almost feels okay, like you're doing something helpful. Because I got that a lot when in the past 2 years where I was there, it's like, that you can make the assumption I wasn't doing the work. I was doing 27 hours a week of work, period. Like I was doing everything right and the weight wasn't budging. It was something bigger. And that can, and I wonder how many of those bigger things, how it would have been missed if I was 40 pounds overweight and stuck there, or 70 pounds overweight and stuck there. Would they have ever, what would have taken to find, what if you couldn't feel that tumor through a pelvic exam? What would it have taken to see anything other than the fat? It's a question that keeps me up at night for sure. Not just for me, but for everyone bigger than me. Like the questioning the quality of care that my husband's going to receive. My children may receive. God knows how they're going to turn out. We're going to mess them up in all kinds of other ways. But that's why these conversations matter now, that we think about the way we talk about and present things now, because these are the messages our kids are getting. Mm-hmm. Whether we use the F word in our household or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We got work to do.
We got a lot of work to do. You can be healthy at every size, unhealthy at every size. And I'm just going to be calling out things that I see as unhealthy as we go. And every once in a while, I'm not here to pathologize. I'm not here to say this person has an eating disorder. That is definitely not my job. But what I can say is, hey, that thing I just saw is disordered. If that action was being taken by someone with a BMI of 17, we would be concerned. So I have to ask, why aren't we concerned when it's happening in someone with a BMI of 37? Why are we celebrating it? Doesn't feel okay to me.
Yeah.
Yay. I don't know. Deep and hard, right? Clap your hands. Yay. And again, this is all easy for me to say as I wander through this world, but that's what privilege is for. It is easier for me to start these conversations. I am more likely to be heard than a fat person demanding to be taken seriously. See me for something other than it's great that they are. And it's wonderful that they're reclaiming their space, the space they should have always had, the freedoms that should have always been afforded, the feelings that no one has ever validated for them. That is wonderful, but we are the ones that with more thin privilege, more white privilege, more cis privilege, more privilege in general, that's what it's for. It's to start these conversations, put others on our platform, sitting back and saying, I can't talk about that. That's not my experience. It's not yours to invalidate, but it can be yours to discuss, and it can be your job to introduce it to others. And that, if you don't want to do that, don't know how to do that, if you have a question about that, email me. I'll figure it out. mk@coachandlove.com. I'll send it to Coach Sarah right away. And we will work it out together. That's what Brainfire the Vanities is all about, and why we wanted to have a bonus episode. I'm thank you for seeing a movie that I knew would be triggering. I think these are important conversations, though, about the pressure you feel is not less than because you're smaller than Amy. the message you took away from that movie is the same as Amy's. The pressures that act on both of you are very real. The way that society responds to both of you, and have like, have the pressures we face is about something ugly out there that we need to combat. It's called diet culture. It's the normalizing of these messages that we don't even see because they're so common. And it's about taking that to a different level so we can all be better and whole. It's not about the person. There's nothing wrong with you. If you saw the movie and didn't see what we saw, we just hope you think about what we saw rather than invalidate what we saw. I'm not telling you that you're wrong. I'm saying, hey, see that thing in the corner? Mm-hmm. It's in the corner. Other people are seeing it too. My experience is as real as your experience. My opinion is as valid as yours. What I'm not going to say is you're wrong. And I hope that no thin person or person with relative thin privilege, because we all have it relative to someone else. Most people that encounter Amy will have thin privilege relative to Amy. So when Amy says, hey, that's hurtful, you should not, it's rather shaming to live in the should. It's a bad idea to invalidate Amy. That's when you need to listen. Mm-hmm. When you say like, oh, I saw some anti-fat themes and they're coming from a fat person. They're not too sensitive. That's real.
Yeah.
And the way that it impacts Amy is also impacting your daughter, wondering if I start running, will I lose weight? Maybe I should only have salads. The real question, is she getting enough protein? Is she getting any carbohydrates? I haven't seen a starch in there. It's a struggle for me with celiac to like get enough starch because they're not like, if I figure out that I don't have what I need, it's why I have yams in my freezer all the time. It's why I have a lot of frozen foods so that I'm always going to have the starch and the carbohydrate because I can't just order a sandwich. Or a lot of options were shut off to me. So I can't, and those are conversations that aren't being had too. Like calories in, calories out, like no, the quality matters and the nutrients matter and all of that is definitely outside of my scope as well. But when we celebrate foregoing pizza for salads, that can send a really ugly message too. I happen to like salads. I like things to go crunch in my mouth. I like pizza just as much. One is not a, when is this a better choice? We're not seeing the full context, but I hope we're having a more robust conversation with our kids.
Yeah, me too, for sure. It's going to be a while before I feel like I would ever want Roz to see that movie. That there would have to be a lot of willingness to have long conversations with me. And right now we're not there. Yeah.
Let me tell you how many conversations I'm having with my kids about that are picking up on these messages. So if you've heard nothing else in this podcast, I hope you hear this. My children, my oldest is 7, and she's already picking up on the message that her father might be a little lazy. He might be, her father, who works harder than any person I've ever met, might be a little lazy, might be a little stupid. Maybe someone needs to educate him on healthy choices. That's horrible. Don't ever say that. If you say that, like, he just needs some education, you're the one who needs an education. That is Monday's mantra, by the way. I got ahead of time, so I couldn't get behind like I did this week. My children, from watching children's movies, it's why I started engaging and being like, no, I'm going to come with you, are picking up on that their father might be less than in some way. And that is not acceptable to me. If you have gotten that message somewhere in society, I see you. Tell me where it is so I can go blow it up and keep and protect my children from it, because their father is fantastic and sexy and wonderful and perfect for us at every size. And the reason he isn't fit is because he hasn't had the bandwidth or the time to do it. He works himself to the ground so we don't lose our health insurance, because he knows that he's married to a woman whose life changed for the worse when her father had a heart attack and everybody, and the entire family was rendered uninsurable because we carry his genes.
Yeah. I love you, Alex Fleming. So, you're great.
I love you, Alex Fleming. And that's where all this came from. In case I haven't told you to your face, like, I love you. I know I've told you that to your face, but this is why I'm having every hard conversation with Cheyenne as it comes across now. Daddy's big tummy is a safe place to land. And that's it. It tells you nothing about your daddy, and it never will. It's the safest place I've ever been. It's the best place I could have found for you. And if that's, and if you were to see the fat and nothing else, seriously, fuck you.
That makes me so sad.
stuff my kids are picking up on it, and yours are bigger. Where are they getting? Take your time. Think about these things. Understand our objections. These feelings are real. Otherwise, my 7-year-old, my 4-year-old wouldn't be picking up on them. You're coached. You are loved. And you can be winning at life at every size. It's why there's no form anywhere that asks for your weight. I don't need it. I don't care. All I need to know is, do you want to move? Great. I'm going to create a safe space for you to do it in this world. I'm going to fight for you to have it. I'm going to use this platform to make sure everybody knows to stay out your way. And I'm going to give you a plan that doesn't abuse your body. I didn't realize how tall an order that actually was until last year.
Thank you for doing that. And thank you everyone for being here. Let's go win it the rest of the week.
You know, and if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. Yay.
Yay.